సి అపరా వాచ్యాంచి గ్రహితాంతి
యసాదో
నానా శమంతే మనసా పిబేతుం
Asanga. We have no association.
Jadava
appearing deaf and dumb. Mahuda completely hidden. Vijnana Virya, full of knowledge. Of Vira, Vicharasi, moving. Apara, possessing unlimited spiritual glories. Vachamsi. Words, yoga, Grahitani, bearing the complete meaning of mystic yoga. Sado, great saintly person. Na, not, na, avas, shamante, are able, manasapi, even by the mind, vetum, to understand. Translation by your search appears to the influence of your great spiritual knowledge is hidden. Actually, you are bereft of all material association, fully absorbed in the thought of the Supreme. Consequently, you are unlimitedly advanced in spiritual knowledge. Please tell me why you are wandering around like a dullard. Oh, great saintly person, you have spoken words approved by the yoga process, but it is not possible for us to understand what you have said. Therefore, kindly explain it. Wherefore, saintly people like Jatpura do not speak ordinary words. Whenever they say it is approved by great yogis and those advanced in spiritual life. That is the difference between ordinary people and saintly people. The listener must also be advanced in understanding the words of such exalted spiritually advanced people as Jatpura. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna, not to others. Lord Krishna especially selected Arjuna for instruction in spiritual knowledge because Arjuna happens to be a great devotee and confidential friend. Similarly, great personalities also speak to the advanced, not to the suitors, vicious women, or unintelligent men. Sometimes it's very risky to give great philosophical instructions to ordinary people, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the benefit of the fallen souls of Kali Yuga, has given us a very nice instruction, the chanting of the instrument, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. The general mass of people, all those sutras and less, can be purified by chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. Then they can understand the exalted philosophical statements of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore adopted. The chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for the general masses. When people gradually become purified, they are instructed in the lesson of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Materialistic people like Sri, Sudra, and Dunjabandhu cannot understand words of spiritual advancement. Yet, one can take to the shelter of a Vaishnava, for he knows the art of enlightening even sutras to the highly elevated subject matter spoken of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Exnanya, I consider your good self the most exalted master of mystic power. You know the spiritual science perfectly well. You are most exalted of all learned sages, and you have descended for the benefit of all human society. You have come to give spiritual knowledge, and you are a direct representative of Kila Deva, the incarnation of Godhead, and plenary portion of knowledge. I am therefore asking you, O spiritual master, what is the most secure shelter in this world? Therefore, as Krishna affirms in Bhagavad Gita, of all yogis, you abide in me with great faith, worshiping me, transcendental loving service, most intimately united with me in yoga as the highest of all. Yadavara was a perfect yogi. He was formerly the Emperor Bharata Maharaj, and he was now the most exalted personality among the sages and the master of all mystic powers. Although Jadavara was an ordinary living entity, he had inherited all the knowledge given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He could therefore be taken directly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in the stanzas of the spiritual mass of Sakshatari Pena Samasta Shastraya. An exalted personality of Jadavara is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he fully represents the Lord by giving knowledge to others. Jadavara is herein accepted as the direct representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he was imparting knowledge on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Maharaja Raghuvinda concluded that it was appropriate to ask him about Matak, the spiritual science. That began Artam, Sagurum, Elabhikachat. This state of conjunction is also confirmed herein. If anyone is at all interested in knowing the spiritual science, he must approach the Guru like Jadavara. As such, my dear sir, it appears the influence of your great spiritual knowledge is hidden. In fact, you are bereft of all material association, fully absorbed in the thought of the Supreme. Consequently, you are unlimitedly advanced in spiritual knowledge. Please tell me why you are wandering around like a dullard. Oh, great saintly person, you have spoken words approved by the yoga process, but it's not possible to understand what you have said. Therefore, kindly explain it. I consider your good self the most exalted master of mystic power. You know the spiritual science perfectly well. You are the most exalted of all learned sages, and you understand the benefit of all human society. You have come to give spiritual knowledge, and you are a direct representative of Kapila Dev, the incarnation of God, and plenary portion of knowledge. I am therefore asking you, a spiritual master, what is the most secure shelter in this world? So, in previous verses, King Rahugan apologized and stated that he feared he had made some sort of offense against Jadavara. So now he begins asking questions. He wants to know the meaning exactly of what Jadavara said, though in general he does know the meaning because he was impressed with his statements and understood they were spiritual. He wants to know the details of this. How does he do this? He does this by praising the position of Jadavara. So though he appears to be Jada, or unintelligent and like a stone more or less, he's actually a Sangha, completely detached from the material world. And actually he is full of Vijnana, Vijnana Virya. He has powerful knowledge, though it is hidden. And he moves about this material world, hidden from others, even though he is full of knowledge. So therefore, he should actually speak enlighten the king, since the king could not understand the meaning of his words, which are a little bit difficult to understand, he is saying. So he praises him, saying that he's actually fully spiritual and beyond the material gunas. And then in the next verse that continues, where he says that he is actually the same as the Supreme Lord, Sakshat Hari. In this way, by praising him, he hopes to get knowledge. So as we know, it is only by pleasing the guru or the devotee that the guru becomes merciful and gives knowledge. Here he tries to please him by praising him. Now, of course, the praises here are not unfounded. They're not flattery only. They're actually true. Jadavara is a very exalted devotee. So when he says that he is the beyond the material association, or that he's the best of yogis, etc., it is not an exaggeration at all. He's actually in a very, very high position. So he says he is Paramam Guru. He is the highest guru and capable of answering Rahugana's questions. So that is the procedure. In order to get knowledge, one must surrender. One must have pranipat. Nipat means to fall down. And pranipat means to fall down extremely. So a person to get knowledge has to properly surrender, which means he has to give up pride, which is our basic obstacle. Pride, of course, is also derived from ignorance. So everyone out of ignorance is proud of their position in the material world, and they think they have some knowledge. So if we think we have knowledge, there's no possibility of getting knowledge. So therefore, one has to admit that one has no knowledge at all. So one has to approach with a very humble attitude, understanding that one's knowledge is actually not sufficient or capable at all. So one comes to learn something new, something one doesn't know about completely. So one must surrender in that process and take oneself as insignificant. And on the other hand, one must also accept that that devotee has knowledge. If we don't think they have knowledge, then what's the point of going to them? So, therefore, here, Rahugana, he praises Jadvara and saying he has got the highest knowledge, he's completely qualified by being detached from the material world, he has Atma Tattva, etc. He has got the knowledge of the soul, etc. And then he says he is directly Hari, Sakshat Hari. So, in one sense, how can he be directly the Lord if he's not the Lord, if he's a jiva? So that question may arise, how can he be directly the Lord? Yes, we can say he's empowered by the Lord, so that is true. So how is he directly the Lord? So, of course, ontologically speaking, no, he cannot be the Lord because a jiva is a jiva. He cannot change into Ishvara Tattva. It's impossible. So, directly in the sense that he represents the Lord completely in that sense. Not partially, but completely. So how can he directly represent the Lord when he's a jiva? So in an absolute sense, no, he cannot, because then he would be the Lord. But we do know that Supreme Lord is very merciful to jivas, and especially those jivas who surrendered, and those jivas who are in prema. So the Lord comes under the control of those devotees. So therefore, the devotee of the Lord also possesses the Lord himself. So in that one sense, he is directly the Lord because the Lord is under the control of the devotee. And therefore the mercy of the Lord is under the control of the devotee as well. So the jiva never changes his identity as jiva. At the same time, when he advances in bhakti and becomes a great devotee in prema, then he has extraordinary powers given by the Supreme Lord himself. So the devotee represents the Lord also because of the Lord's great mercy to that devotee. So in that sense we can say he is Sakshat Hari, directly the Supreme Lord. At the same time, we should not blur the distinctions between jiva and Ishvara, and therefore I think that they're exactly equal. And therefore Prabhupada and the Purport makes very clear that the devotee is merely the representative of the Supreme Lord. It doesn't say he actually is. Otherwise we end up with something like Mayavad philosophy where everybody becomes Supreme Lord. So the distinction has to be made. So therefore that statement of being directly the Lord is somewhat qualified by the fact that the difference between jiva and Ishvara never disappears. But it is stated, making a strong statement, and we should not think also an exaggeration, because the Supreme Lord does come under the control of the devotee. So that is the sixth quality of bhakti, Krishna Karshani, that manifests in prema. The devotee controls the Supreme Lord. The Lord himself falls under the devotee's control. So that is a very exalted position. So in that sense, we can say Sankshatari, he is directly the Lord, because he has the Lord's mercy and distributes that. So Jadvara, as we see, was very advanced and got the mercy of the Lord because of his advancement. And therefore the Lord arranged for his deliverance in this material world in three lives, from Bharat to the deer to Jadvarat. He made proper arrangements for him. And we see that Bharat, again, acted in such a way that he showed his qualities as an advanced devotee. One, being completely detached from the material world and completely absorbed in the Lord, which he exhibited finally when he became Jadvarat, and which he failed to do as Bharat Maharaj, when he thought of the deer. So he completed his sadhana, or not his sadhana exactly, because he went beyond bhava to prema, but he became completely perfect and was not associated with the material world at all. Therefore, it was difficult for people to figure out who he was. They could not detect his identity. And that is why it is said in the Nectar Devotion that a person in prema, one cannot describe him, because there is no rule on how he will act and what he will do and what he will say, etc. We cannot completely describe him in any particular way. So that we see here in the case of Jadvarat, completely beyond convention and whatever, unpredictable and undetectable by most people. Not because he anything else, he was purposely trying to hide as such, but ultimately, again, it was his complete absorption in the Supreme Lord and his wariness of anything in the material world as being contaminated. So therefore, he had no identity with anything in the material world, any of his conventions or whatever. So he was fixed in a very high position. So the words of Rahugana are not in any way exaggeration or flattery. They're actually very, very true. Though we also understand that King Rahugana really did not probably understand the depth of his Jadvarat's realization, because he made a mistake in the very beginning by insulting him also. So he couldn't understand everything. So with a genuine sense of inquiry, he's asking, what does all of this mean? You please explain in detail that your statements about spiritual life and Atma and body, etc. So this is his qualification. He of course committed aparad, so that was a disqualification. But then he repented and he asked forgiveness, and then he showed qualification by being inquisitive. He wanted to know. He had a desire to really know. So that is represented here by these questions he's asking to Jadvarat. So if one is genuinely interested in spiritual advancement, then he will have such questions. That is Saddharma Pritcha, one of the preliminary angas of about 64 angas, to inquire about the real Dharma. So we see that is the case, of course, of Rupa and Sanata when they approached Lord Chaitanya. They also said, what is it? I'm wandering around this material world. What is the solution? What should I do in this position? So this is the position here of King Rahugana. He's asking spiritual questions. What is the meaning of your statements? You're talking about the material body being useless, etc. So you please, in detail, explain all these things to me. So he is genuinely interested in understanding spiritual knowledge. That's a good qualification. So as Bhagavad Gita says, pariprashna is also one of the qualities. Pariprashna means thorough questioning. So here we see that this is what Rahugana is doing with Jadvarat. He's asking spiritual questions, not material questions. So this is his again his qualification for getting spiritual knowledge. He of course is surrendered without pride, and he is Hare Krishna, he's inquisitive to get real knowledge. Very, very qualified in spite of the fact he had made offense. So we find that Jagvara was merciful to him. He did not reject him in spite of the fact that there was offense on the king's part. So he didn't reject him because he also saw his great qualification, that he had some genuine desire for spiritual advancement. So therefore, he did not consider the offense very significant. And in the next chapter, he begins to answer his questions.
We see normally in Puja, he must have made his speeches. But we see in case of Narada Muni, he only speeches. He said he's empowered to just preach for the Lord, or it's like in Prema also devotee speeches.
Well, Narada Muni is a special case because it's also Shaktivesh avatar. He's an avatar of the Lord, and his particular Shakti is Bhakti, so that's what he teaches. But usually the avatars, many of them, will teach. They come with a particular purpose. So the Kumaras come to teach Jnana, so that's what they teach. In spite of the fact that they're Jnanis and they should be absorbed in Brahman and not say anything, they teach Jnana, actually. So similarly, Narada Muni is Shaktivesh avatar teaching Bhakti. His particular function is Bhakti. And so therefore, that's what he preaches all the time. He preaches Bhakti as his particular function. So as far as regular devotees in the material world, when they reach that stage, the definition in Bhagavatam is that they are completely absorbed in the Supreme Lord. So they do not see dualities of the material world. They do not see demons and devotees or anything. So therefore, what is the necessity of preaching? So they are simply absorbed in the Lord at that stage. That is the primary definition.
It is difficult to understand that who is in Brahman stage.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
And one thing is that in the Chakshadha Yuktyana Samastra Shastra, the Bhagavad Gita, see, one should worship the Guru as like a God, but not think that God.
Mm.
But whenever Guru falls down, that time, see, one time he is having some respect, but when he falls down,
So, yeah, there in that position, if he is fallen and continues to be fallen, then we cannot give that same respect, obviously.
But once he worshipped him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in other words, when we worship a person as God, so to speak, we're still seeing that distinction. Yeah? God does not fall, etc. And, of course, a person on prema doesn't fall. If one is in bhava, as the case of Bara, then he did fall. And of course, if one is in the lesser stage, also one can fall. So one may take those persons as guru again. But at the same time, we should also be very aware of that distinction of when we talk about sakshagari. We cannot put him on that same level as the prem bhakta or even the bhava bhakta. So, yes, he must be respected because he is guru, but at the same time, we have to be realistic about what his actual position is. And therefore, because he's not on that high level, he is sakshadari in the sense that he's giving the teachings. Yes. So in that sense, to the extent that he's giving the teachings, then we have to respect him as non-different from the Lord. That's all.
Well, initially he was in Bhava state. Now he's in Madhyama stage, okay, no problem. But problem is now that stage is different now.
Yeah.
Stages from Bhava stage to now
yeah.
In Madhyama stage.
Yeah.
So he should worship continue or?
It depends on that particular devotee's position.
Mm-hmm.
If he's still a devotee, one can give respect definitely, because we should respect all devotees. And as Krishna says, you know, sadhavaiva samantabhya. So you have to respect. Now, if you're your individual
decision if you want to respect him as guru at that point or not. That's your decision. If you want to, you can, because we can respect all devotees as gurus also. There's the story in the 11th canto of the we take the bumblebee as the guru and the prostitute as the guru and so many things. So yeah, we can take so many teachers in that sense. It's individual at that point. And of course, if he commits aparad and he rejects bhakti, then one cannot respect him as guru. One must reject him.
That may come in the way of trying to find out who can give him knowledge and who cannot. Because of the pride, he may reject qualified gurus.
Yeah. So that's his misfortune. That he never gets guru.
Because sometimes what happens is that...
Means he's unqualified, so then he doesn't deserve anybody.
Yes. So sometimes what happens is, even in ISKCON, there are certain devotees. My experience is that they will accept teaching from certain particular group, and their perspective on others would be like, they are not body Prabhupada, or, and they make very heavy statements. And
well, I think, what is it, guru is one. So at the same time, we should be have this attitude that if we get too caught up in one guru, it's also dangerous. Now, of course, we should have devotion to guru, but at the same time, if we're caught up in one particular guru and nobody else, within a movement of ours, then it is also dangerous in the sense that it more or less divides the movement and creates factions within the movement. So therefore, a real devotee within ISKCON should also understand that all, there's many people who are qualified to give good instructions. So we can take instructions from anywhere. So we have to take for one person only. And we see that as the case of course, many of our great devotees in this movement, and even in Sri Sambhara or whatever. Ramanuja had 11 gurus or whatever. You can take one person and concentrate. He respected so many, and he said they had different knowledge, so he took knowledge from where he could get, and he accepted them. He didn't take one person, but many.
But in this case, Maharaj, the disciple will not be doing a Vaishnava like that to other gurus.
What's that?
The disciple, the follower of a particular guru, he will be doing Vaishnava like that to other gurus, and then he can follow because of this.
It depends if he actually comes up around.
But when you are considering one is equal, the two are not equal, although they may be in the same place, then does it will not be a Vaishnava?
To some extent, I suppose it depends on what he's thinking, actually. It would depend on his attitude, I suppose. If he's rejecting everybody as being completely unqualified or whatever, it is somewhat of an upper arm.
Yeah.
There, but also blocks his own advancement.
Might give one example in case. Actually, utility as a principle is a very, very difficult subject matter to understand. A particular spiritual master sees that a particular talent of a devotee or somehow can be used in Krishna's service. So a project is launched. But then others may say, like for example, a hospital. Now we have a Bhakti Dham hospital in Bombay. So there is a particular perspective on it that how devotees have been rotated and their talents have been rotated. Whereas others may quote, Prabhupada never wanted a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And why do we have a hospital in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we see that every month they make 24, 25 devotees, who start chanting.
Yeah.
They book to the hospital and come
chanting.
So then it becomes very difficult. There's certain group who is completely rejecting this idea that.
Well, we have to be intelligent and see, judge things by results also, isn't it? If we get bad results, fine, then we can say, we cannot do that. In other words, Prabhupada rejected hospitals in the sense that Ramakrishna opens hospitals for material ends or whatever, and material benefits of people, and they think that helping people is good, and that's the absolute or whatever. So in that sense, material goodness is not our goal, so why get involved in that? On the other hand, again, there's all sorts of ways one can preach and whatever. So we do food for life and so many things like that also. Then one, we can criticize that also. Some people do. Some devotees also criticize that. You shouldn't do that. But then Prabhupada also did that. So Prabhupada didn't open any, he didn't also open any schools. We shouldn't have any schools at all, maybe. Prabhupada didn't open any schools. Of course, we had the Gurukul, one Gurukul in Vrindavan, maybe. But other than that, he didn't open these other public schools or anything like that. So we can say, no, we shouldn't open schools like that. But true, in one sense, we don't want to propagate material education. At the same time, we can also, if we do it properly, we can also bring those children up to be Krishna conscious. So there's nothing wrong with that also. But that's, of course, not our major endeavor. But if people are, there's some people who may be teachers or whatever, or in that field anyway, why can't they do that? Just like they're working in computer companies and everything, has nothing to do with Krishna. We should condemn them and tell them to go back to the material world for that, you know? But nevertheless, they're doing that because they have to survive in the material world. Some people can survive by teaching and doing whatever. In the meantime, they can also make it into Krishna. People are doctors. We're going to tell them to stop being doctors, whatever. So let them be doctors and let them do it for Krishna, whatever. So what's wrong with that? No, nothing wrong with that.
They have a good spiritual worship
tradition.
Huh? The doctors and staff nurses are devotees in the same bhakti they have a good working tradition.
Yeah, so they're working, but at the same time, it's favorable for their Krishna consciousness, and it's also favorable for the patients. So what's wrong with that? So we can criticize, he probably didn't do it, but again, if the result doesn't do it, then maybe Prabhupada would be pleased at this time if it was a hospital like that. Why not? So we can't predict everything Prabhupada would say in its particular conditions. The one he may say don't do, one he may say do it. Yeah, so there was nothing wrong with that.
So Maharaj, actually when Prabhu takes a call that utility difference is going to be enough, because there is always different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
Well, the thing is, we don't make these our major goals like that. That this is our mission, like open schools or whatever. But if there are people there and it doesn't take any endeavor and they're already doing it anyway, then why don't do it? Why not? They can do it, you know. People are there to help them. Fine. Just like projects, one of the rules is don't have big projects. That's one of the angas of bhakti. But yeah, we see the Goswamis have big projects and they had Radha Govinda temple, etc. Why? Because they weren't distracted. But people were there. Was Akbar, whoever was there, built the temple for them. So why not engage in the service? People are there to use their money for something like that. Let them do that and somehow help them be Krishna conscious. In the meantime, we're talking about Varnashram. So, I mean, if you're thinking about Varnashram, you're thinking about a lot of things which are very indirectly. Even farming is indirectly. What does that have to do with bhakti in itself? Planting crops in itself? No, it's nothing to do with bhakti. So, I mean, in itself, if you have varnas, then you're going to have occupations, and that's not directly bhakti also. It's just working to support your body. But you can use it and direct it to Krishna, fine, it's no problem then also. Well, everyone has their own ideas, so we should just see that, you know, and they think like that, but if we can see the ultimate result is good, then what is wrong with it? That's all. In other words, people have different attitudes to things, we accept that also. But at the same time, use one's own intelligence to make your own decision, that's all. See, ultimately, the main thing is you chant Hare Krishna, finish. And don't do anything else. Everything else is useless. This is Lord Chaitanya's main principle, but we do miss so many things. Yeah. And so, yes, some of them Prabhupada mentioned, some of them didn't mention like this, but whatever's there in the material world, somehow we can utilize it. So it's like a type of yukta vairagya, so to speak. We can use it directly or indirectly in Krishna service. Then, okay, let people do that if that's their inclination anyway.
But Maharaj, if we react to these people, would that again be a Vaishnava prabhu? Like if they want to tell us that
Well, they're trying to preach to you, then you can just say, well, I believe in this. That's finished. Leave it at that. Why not? Why not engage everybody in Krishna service? Finish. We engage Albert Ford in Krishna service also, even though he's doing so many things which are not, you know, making cars or whatever with other kind of Krishna. Well, they will never say so because they are in a high level and they are only saying, as Jan Bharat says, that I'm the lowest devotee or whatever. That is their attitude. And they don't care also because they're simply absorbing the Lord.
Thank you.